Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.
You probably heard the old phrase, can you hear the world's smallest violin playing for you, when people are being rather unsympathetic. But it turns out you wouldn't be able to hear it because it's smaller than a grain of dust and fits inside the width of a human hair. Physicists at Loughborough University have used cutting-edge nanotechnology to create it. Joining us is Professor Kelly Morrison. She's at the Experimental Physics Group at Loughborough University. Tell me, Kelly, when we talk about small, how small are we talking when we talk about the world's smallest violin?
Yeah, that's a good question, because small means different things to different people, right?
Yeah.
For this particular violin, it was of the order of 13 microns by 35 microns. And we compared it to the width of a human hair, because you could imagine that if we had created it on a human hair, that tends to range between 20 and 100 microns. So that's giving you an idea of the thickness. It would have quite easily have fit on it. So it's of the order of the width of a human hair.
Okay.
About one thousandth of a millimeter, which is 1,000th of a meter. So it's quite small.
Yeah, it's very, very small. And does it work? Does it have moving parts?
Wouldn't that be great? No, I can confirm it does not work. If it did, if we did have strings that you could actually vibrate, I did the math, and we wouldn't be able to hear it anyway.
Hmm.
That's because the frequency that it would generate would be somewhere in the range of bats.
Right. Okay. So
maybe
that's really interesting. Okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
So this is an image, essentially a 2D image, in many respects, or is it a physical 3D object?
Yeah, this particular one was a 2D image. So we created it out of platinum. We used this process called thermal lithography. It's a bit like getting a very small needle, heating it up and scratching it through this gel-like substance to create the image that we want to transfer. And then we placed a thin layer. And when I say thin, it's very thin. This is nanometers, so 1,000 times thinner than the size of it, layer into the stencil that we'd created, that we could then do some processing steps with, and it reveals the violin that you can look at. So for that particular example, that was just a 2D sketch. We have done other tests where we've done 3D versions as well. We've just not talked about that.
You must have a very steady hand.
No. Well, no, I do. A lot of the work that I have done does require a steady hand. And yeah, that can be useful. I've moved things of similar size around with a piece of wire. But for this, the entire process is controlled by computer. So I just have to not drop this large thing when I'm moving it around.
I see. And so when you say a thing, I'm trying to imagine what it's like. Is it like painted onto something, or is it actually movable around? Is it like a little Monopoly piece? Is it like something like that?
It's a lot like screen printing. So if you've ever played with or observed someone doing screen printing, where you can put a pattern on a t-shirt or posters.
Right.
They create a stencil, often in a bit of polyester, just a material that won't let the paint through. They create a stencil and then they kind of force the paint through it. It pushes through and it transfers that pattern. We're kind of doing the same thing, but on a smaller scale.
Right. And so what is this particular procedure useful for? Like, why would you ever want to be able to do this? I mean, it's cute to have the world's smallest violin. What's the point of it?
Okay. I think everyone's got something on their person, I could argue, that has benefited from nanoelectronics or microelectronics. That'd be your phone,
right?
Anything with any kind of electronics in it. Maybe it's even you've got a chipboard and your key fob for your car. That requires very precise patterning of electronic circuits, or creating things we call transistors. And we've seen this huge increase in the amount of memory that you can store, or how fast the computer can work, so the number of transistors that you've got.
Yeah.
And that's because they've been able to really squeeze things down into smaller areas. they're now at the point where things are so small that they generate too much heat and it makes things unstable. So a lot of physicists are looking at alternative ways to do similar functions that gets past that problem of increasing heat generation as you make things smaller.
Right.
And you might notice that, you know, if you look at computers or phones, you haven't seen a significant improvement in memory storage or processing power beyond some software additions at the same rate as we saw in the early 2000s.
So this idea, the principle Moore's law, that over the course of, I think it's 18 months, computers will get twice as powerful and half as expensive. That is dying out now. We're struggling because we've gone to the very edges of technology, or are companies like Intel and NVIDIA always managing to keep up by coming up with new technologies and new techniques?
I mean, historically, that there have been these technological jumps, and that allows them to keep up with Moore's law, right? But no, we're fast approaching the point where the current technology we use for standard computers, it will not keep going. There is a point where things get too small. And so you have to rethink how you're going to approach it. And that might be 3D electronic. It might be a very different architecture.
Right. Any clues as to what that might be? I mean, obviously, we use silicon for a lot of the chips that we use at the moment. Are there other elements that are candidates? Are there other approaches, like, as you mentioned, you know, sort of the sort of nanomaterials that might give us properties that will propel us further along the graph of Moore's law? Or are all of those sort of being explored? I mean, I know you probably wouldn't be aware of everything, but what's your knowledge of that field at the moment?
I mean, there's a lot of interest in different areas, right? And one that I'm particularly interested in at the moment is looking at different branches of 2D materials. So if you've heard of it, you'll have heard of graphene, this atomically thin carbon layer, and a lot of words being thrown about how it could be very good for conducting electricity and heat for various reasons. Graphene isn't the only 2D material that exists. There's a whole family. Yeah. There's a lot of excitement. And there are people looking at what happens if you sandwich these things on top of one another. You get these really cool, what I would call physics effects coming out that you wouldn't expect. But you can also play with what that material sees. So you can sit it on, what I'm interested in is sitting it on a nano-fabricated surface. So you're kind of poking it at all the right points. And that introduces a little bit of tension, some strain, so that it changes aspects that are useful for you. So you might be able to, for example, take a 2D material. You think it'll be great as an alternative transistor, but it doesn't quite have the right, we talk about mobility, it doesn't quite have the right mobility. So let's play around with strain or electric field that it sees so that we can shift it into the right thing. And that they're much more sensitive to this than the bulk materials we normally work with.
So, you know, material science is really, and it's such an underappreciated science, but it is the backbone of all modern invention, really, in many ways. The understanding how materials chemically and physically interact with the world and how to manipulate those to create all of the incredible things that we see around us. In terms of using something like AI, are we seeing any benefits yet? AlphaFold is this incredible program developed by DeepMind, Google's AI wing, where they were able to predict all of the possible proteins available in nature, and scientists can now kind of have a look at some of these and see whether or not they might be good candidates for medicines and so on. In the world of nanotechnology and nanophysics, is AI yielding something like that for material science? Can it cut down candidates of potential molecules or arrangements of molecules that would give us a better results?
I think the use of AI could be potentially be very exciting. For me, from a thin film kind of perspective, our challenge is often that very small differences will have a huge impact on what we see at the end. To the extent that I can make something in my lab in my FinFilm system, and I could go do it somewhere else, and it might be different because it's seen a little bit more oxygen. It's tiny differences that make have an impact there, and that's difficult to account for in AI until we fully understand it, until we can fully control it. But it's got huge potential already for, say, pharmacological, so chemistry related, or bulk materials. I've seen examples of it being used to scope out potential combinations of elements that might be useful for, you know, energy storage or refrigeration, different types of technologies that you could use. So it can be used in that sense. And it's, you're really only limited by your understanding of the model, the chemistry, the physics, and everything that we're looking at with nanoelectronics. We're pushing that understanding, pushing these small materials kind of towards the edge of what we fully understand at this point.
Yeah. I mean, we take our phones for granted, really, but the level of sophistication of the means laying down these tiny, tiny structures that are so sensitive in the fabrication of them, that it's actually incredible to think about. Yeah. It just doesn't get enough appreciation, I think.
No, it's a $1 billion industry for a reason.
Yeah. Kelly Morrison, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae,
proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.